Have a good weekend. And that's it for me. Next week, same place, same time. Positive.
Yo, family. Them really nobody know. Them not
live like this.
Fighting a YouTube war. Obviously, them reach the zenith in them ability to do better. So them a repeat lyrics. So me a kill them lyrically. Alright? Okay. One note, flight two, boy, click, jelly, when Max start shelling, nah, top, Machiavelli, pine 7-6-2, with the telly from belly, clap in on your celly, left your no grow like Kelly, so the mums on me belly, and you know me no left Bibi Nelly. How about do some cartoon, man? Tom and Jerry, bro. You not scary. Me a bad boy.
We're from tune next week, you know. Some brand new track,
you Miss Cherry. Spanglers, always up the knees, berry. Punish town, I don't till them squeeze everything out of the where the Chinese carry military. Every style, me the lyric carry.
Lightning strike.
Stormy night. Smoke a cloud the sky. Nobody try. Anybody move ya. Like Stalingrad. Nobody alive be a man in bag. My war better than Russia plus Germany. Call the funeral ceremony.
I get shell way.
Me no love chat. Me love clap. Why? Femme see the black knapsack. I not do around with my backpack. Regular police have to leave the streets. When the beast them start wrapping up the piece. Rock foot have a little touch of me grease. Me think them them have a little grease. Them easy fit. So easy me. Me with lyrics and skill then. Long time me build them. Me sick pies a pill them. So me make one of the crocodile run go. Finger pon the get lighter than feather. First man step out him foot up.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show, a part of CKUT's Off the Hour. Prison Radio has been on the air for more than 10 years. Prison Radio seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggle by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging our ideas about what are prisons and the people inside our jails. Prison Radio is dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. This is in the interest of forging stronger ties with incarcerated and non-incarcerated people, ensuring that prisoners have direct control over their representation and that our understanding of prisons be informed by those who live inside their walls. We invite anyone who is interested in collaborating on programming to contact us. Those who have been affected by the prison system in any way are encouraged to get involved. You can email news@cqt.ca or prison@cqt.ca, or you can call us at 514-448-4041, extension 6788. You're listening to CQUT, Montreal Community Campus Radio, located on 90.3 FM on the dial, and www.cqut.ca online.
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace.
My name is Noah.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today is the Prison Radio Show's Prisoner Justice Day special. And this year, our show happens to fall on Prison Justice Day itself, August 10th. We'll talk more about the history of Prisoner Justice Day and hear some different perspectives on it today on our show, including audio from Peter Collins and Greg McMaster, as well as others. First, as usual, we'll start the show with some news. First off, the Sudbury Jail will host an advocacy event later this week for prisoners who die of unnatural deaths, such as homicide or suicide while incarcerated. The event is being organized in collaboration with the John Howard Society. The event will include a spiritual commemoration, which will be led by the jail's chaplain. Women from the Native Friendship Center are also expected to be there to lead drumming songs. The Sudbury event is one of many set to take place today in prisons across so-called Canada and elsewhere as part of Prisoner Justice Day.
A recent government-ordered review in the UK is suggesting that video calling technology be made available to some prisoners so as to facilitate communication with family members who are unable to visit them. The report suggests that Skype or similar video calling technology is a way to help facilitate people who are incarcerated being able to maintain connection with family members on the outside, something which the report recognizes as being important in reducing levels of violence and self-harm in prison, as well as being, quote-unquote, fundamentally important if people are to change. The Ministry of Justice has said that it has already started developing a strategy for taking forward the review's recommendations regarding the use of video calling in prisons.
Yesterday, inmates in a Texas prison finally received a response to a lawsuit filed in 2014 demanding cooler temperatures for those held in the Wallace Pack Unit State Prison. Prisoners being held at the Wallace Pack Unit will temporarily be moved to air-conditioned facilities after a federal judge ordered the state prison to cool off for the sake of the health of those being held inside there. Although no heat-related deaths have been reported at the Wallace Pack Unit specifically, at least 23 prisoners have died because of heat in Texas since 1998. The judge who gave the order also ordered that the Texas Department of Corrections also come up with a plan within 15 days to house heat-sensitive inmates, such as the elderly and disabled, in dormitories with temperatures of no more than 88 degrees Fahrenheit and give additional inmates access to respite areas. Plans to add temporary air conditioning or move some inmates to areas of the prison which are already air conditioned proved to be too expensive and posed security concerns, respectively, so the TDCJ announced last week that they would instead be transferring inmates in the Wallace Pack Unit instead of fixing the prison. It's unclear how long the inmates will stay at the new facilities, but officials have said it's not a long-term solution because there's a lack of infrastructure.
Organizers of a petition demanding that Correctional Services Canada implement major policy changes for trans people in prison are asking that people call in today to keep up the pressure on those officials responsible for stalling on this policy change. The list of demands, created by a group of trans prisoners in collaboration with the Prisoner Correspondence Project, is as follows. 1. Always prioritize alternatives to incarceration. 2. Give all trans prisoners the right to choose their gendered housing in prison. 3. End involuntary segregation. 4. Provide access to clothing and personal items regardless of gender. 5. Ensure immediate and continuous access to qualified health professionals. 6. Allow prisoners to choose which guards perform searches. 7. Arrange to offer private shower and bathroom access. 8. Ease access for outside groups and visitors. 9. Raise wages and living allowances. Calling in today is one way you can take concrete action to show solidarity with folks inside for Prisoner Justice Day. You can call the following individuals. Minister of Public Safety Ralph Goodale at 306-585-2202. You're part of the constituency for Ralph Goodale. And Ralph Goodale's number at Parliament is 613-947-1153. You can also call Commissioner Don Head at 613-995-5781. Finally, you can call Assistant Commissioner Larry Motyuk at 613-996-2180. To read the full statement, including the list of demands, you can visit prisonercorrespondenceproject.com, or you can write to us at the Prison Radio Show if you'd like a paper copy sent to you. Prisoner Justice Day today, August 10th, is a day set aside to remember and bring visibility to all those who have died inside Canadian prisons. Wherever you find the shackles of oppression, you'll also find the spirit of resistance. There are a great many prisoners who were and still are involved in the struggle for prisoners' rights within the walls. Every year on August 10th, prisoners fast and refuse to work in a show of solidarity to remember those who have died inside, victims of murder, suicide, and neglect. The day is originally based on the death of Eddie Nalon, a prisoner who was being held in Millhaven Maximum Security Prison in Bath, Ontario, who bled to death in the segregation unit there on August 10, 1974. The following year, on August 10th, prisoners in Millhaven refused to work and went on a one-day hunger strike, as well as held a memorial service. The following year, in 1976, prisoners in Millhaven once again went on a one-day hunger strike to commemorate not only Eddie Nalon, but also Robert Landers, another inmate who had died in segregation earlier that year. Thousands of prisoners across Canada also went on a one-day hunger strike on August 10, 1976. Since 1976, Prisoner Justice Day has become an international day of solidarity with prisoners in many places, marking this day of mourning, remembrance, and resistance.
This statement from the Prison Justice Day Committee in 2001 remains relevant today. Prisoners' Justice Day is August 10th, the day prisoners have set aside as a day to fast and refuse to work in a show of solidarity to remember those who have died unnecessarily, victims of murder, suicide, and neglect. The day when organizations and individuals in the community hold demonstrations, vigils, worship services, and other events in common resistance with prisoners. The day to raise issue with the fact that a very high rate of women are in prison for protecting themselves against their abusers. This makes it obvious that the legal system does not protect women who suffer violence at the hands of their partners. It is a day to remember that there are a disproportionate number of Natives, African Canadians, and other minorities and marginalized people in prisons. Prisons are the ultimate form of oppression against struggles for recognition and self-determination. August 10th is a day to raise public awareness of the demands made by prisoners to change the criminal justice system and the brutal and inhumane conditions that lead to so many prison deaths. It's a day to oppose prison violence, police violence, and violence against women and children. It's a day to publicize that, in their fight for freedom and equality, the actions of many political prisoners have been criminalized by government. As a result, there are false claims that there are no political prisoners in North American prisons. August 10th is a day to raise public awareness of the economic and social costs of a system of criminal justice which punishes for revenge. If there is ever to be social justice, it will only come about using a model of healing justice, connecting people to the crimes and helping offenders take responsibility for their actions. Prisoner Justice Day is a day to renew the struggle for HIV/AIDS education, prevention, and treatment in prison. It's a day to remind people that the criminal justice system and the psychiatric system are mutually reinforcing methods that the state uses to control human beings. There is a lot of brutality by staff committed in the name of treatment. Moreover, many deaths in the psych prisons remain uninvestigated.
The time is presently 5:12 p.m., and you're listening to a Prisoner Justice Day episode of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
For 3 days, we're taking action in creating the world we want. We will unapologetically occupy this island, this city, because there's an urgent need to act. Because there are too many phobias. Negrophobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, homophobia, transphobia. Together, we rise to reject this model of phobias and invite you to join us for the fourth edition of Hoodstock on August 11, 12, and 13 in Montréal Nord with workshops, conferences, and film projections that will reflect our realities. Because everything is possible and we have to continue to believe in us, in our strength, and in our capacities, save the dates. And for more information, follow Hoodstock on Facebook. Together, we rise.
Up next here on the Prison Radio Show, we have a piece that Peter Collins wrote about a prolonged period of solitary confinement, which also speaks more broadly to the depth of isolation and deprivation that prisoners endure. With the help of people in the community, his writing was made into a film, which he narrates.
The air was so hot and stagnant, it was difficult to breathe. I lay perfectly still in an effort to avoid any exertion which might have made it worse. It was one of those sticky, humid days that never seems to end. half-dressed and face down on my bed. I was drifting in and out of consciousness. I felt her soft finger tracing a line along my back as she whispered loving words to me. I sank deeper into the gentle embrace of sleep's cool darkness. I dreamt of being held, touched, and loved. At some point, I awoke in a disoriented fog. As I struggled to get my bearings, I felt her fingers gently touch my arm, and I closed my eyes again. It felt like a moment, but it could have been an hour or maybe more when a loud noise jarred me awake. Instinct took over, and I was on my feet in an instant, ready to defend myself. Reality was slow to join me, but caught up a moment later, and I realized where I was. The smashing echoes of steel on steel seamlessly blended in with angry screaming voices. The cacophony of noise was the prison's endlessly cruel heartbeat. A sense of hopeless depression enveloped me. Only a moment ago, I had been in one of those deliciously pleasureful dreams that felt so real it hurt to wake up. The swarming sense of loss surrounded me and pushed me back onto the unforgiving steel bunk as I realized I wasn't with my wife. It had been years since I'd heard from her, seen her, or been touched by her. I closed my eyes and strained to get back to that wispy dream reprieve, back to my favorite alternate universe, back to sleep. I lay perfectly still, trying to tune out the metal slamming on metal, the barked orders, the hopeless pleas, and the angry screams. I'd been practicing meditation in prison for over a decade, and had some ability to separate myself from my surroundings. Finding peace in the big house is a useful skill to acquire, but forgetting where you are isn't recommended, as it can be dangerous in here. I calmed my racing heart while my mind tried to disengage from the cell block. At some point, I drifted into my alternate reality, and again I felt her gentle touch on my cheek and then my lip. I wanted to retreat into her loving arms. Her touch was feather light, and it tickled me. I shuddered involuntarily, and she was gone. I closed my eyes again, and soon she was back with me. I wanted her to hold me, but she never did. The food slot slammed open and a tray of food was shoved in. I was back in the real world. I got up and looked at the tray with resignation. A warm cup of brownish liquid they called coffee, two slices of bread, a scoop of mashed potato, and soggy overcooked green beans, with a slice of bologna and a single packet of mustard. I keep telling the food steward I'm a vegan. I don't eat animal products, but he doesn't listen and they just don't care. So sitting next to the toilet, I ate my cold mashed potato sandwich with mushy beans and washed it down with the coffee. I placed my tray on the food slot, and a few moments later, it was pulled out and the slot slammed shut. I heard the guard yelling at someone to return the food tray. I lie down and try to block out the sounds. The dispute is one I've heard a thousand times before, and it permeates the atmosphere. It echoes in my cell and sinks uncomfortably into my teeth. Feels like chewing tinfoil. I hate hearing these recurrent provocations that flow back and forth so easily from guards and prisoners. Abusive accusations, recriminations, and insult leap out at each other effortlessly and thoughtlessly, with no human regard for the other, each justified in their own positions and never able to see the other's point of view. I try to get back to my wife, but I can't get past the iron door, and the more I try, the further away she becomes. I yearn to drift across the universe to that distant land, but the border crossing is closed. I just can't find sleep. So I sit on the floor with my back to the wall, hoping to absorb some of the coolness from the steel walls and cement floor, but to no avail. So I just sit in the sweltering heat, swimming in my sweat and filth. Showers here at the Hotel California are twice a week, if you get lucky. The guard bangs on the cell door and asks if I want to go to yard. I say no, without thinking. Yard is a small asphalt enclosure with high concrete walls. The sun never shines into the yard, but if you look up past the chain-link fence, the razor wire that spans wall to wall like a porous steel roof, you can see the sky, maybe a cloud or two, and occasionally you might even see a bird fly by. No, I wanted to spend some time in the clouds, but with my wife. So I closed my eyes and tried to disengage from reality. The time dragged by and it seemed like I was still in the prison, but somehow I felt her fingers on my leg. pressing on me. I was greedy for human touch, so I closed my eyes and pretended it was her fingers. I tried to stay perfectly still because I didn't want to frighten the fly off and be left alone. As I sat there, the fly took off and landed on my shoulder. I noticed I was breathing shallowly as I could, in an effort not to disturb the fly. On some level, I realized that this may be considered by the officials, or almost anyone, as strange behavior, but I didn't care what they might think. The world was so far away that nothing mattered. I remember wondering if I should be concerned about diminishing mental capacity. I had read that long-term isolation was bad for mental health. I surmised that simulated human touch was better than none. As I share this story now, I realize that this may be the first recorded symbiotic relationship between a fly and a human. The fly was getting nourishment from the salts and minerals in my sweat in exchange for allowing me to enhance my dreams with simulated human touch and thereby possibly avoid isolation-induced correctional dementia. But I found myself trying to stay very still so I wouldn't frighten the fly away. Whenever I was let out of my cell, I would try to catch more flies and bring them back to my cell, my eyes constantly scanning for flies. No matter what I was doing, if a fly landed on me, I would instantly become still and let them walk around. From time to time, my limited landscape was void of any flies, and whenever there were no flies to accompany me, I felt prison's loneliness more profoundly. I've heard of people becoming more susceptible to depression during the winter months due to a lack of sunshine, but it appears I had a completely different reason. One day, while time was whittling my life away, I felt a sharp pain, and I noticed a fly was on top of a cut on my arm. I waved the fly away, but it came right back to the cut again. After several waves, I realized the fly was very interested in the blood from the cut. I knew that it was probably a bad idea to let a fly walk around drinking from a cut, so I covered the cut with a piece of sticky tape from an envelope. The fly continued to look for the cut, but couldn't find it. As a result, I got the idea to bite my cheek and mix the saliva with blood, and then spread the mixture on the inside of my forearm, as the skin there was more sensitive. The fly was very interested in this and spent a great deal of time walking around on my inner forearm seeking the source. I spread some of the mixture on the sensitive area of my neck. This unconventional relationship has gone on for decades, and while I can't recall how many flies have kept me company throughout my incarceration, I can say I appreciated the moments that they allowed me to dream that I was somewhere else with someone I loved.
That was A Fly in the Ointment, written and narrated by Peter Collins, artist, activist, and prisoner who is serving a life sentence, who died of cancer in Bath Penitentiary in Ontario in August of 2015, 2 years ago. Peter was a longtime contributor to the Prison Radio Show from Inside Prison.
Next, we have audio from Greg McMaster, who wrote this statement for Prisoner Justice Day 2017. The piece, titled Calling All Heroes, is a reflection on the changing face of prison and the challenges prisoners face in forming an intergenerational advocacy movement.
Greg McMaster is a longtime friend and contributor to PASAN and our work for prisoner justice. He has been engaged with groups like Lifeline, John Howard, Prison TV, and countless others for over 30 years. I have been speaking with Greg for some time now, and when we met for the first time in February face-to-face, he said to me, "You've probably read my work." When I responded that I hadn't, he quickly followed with, "You need to find me online, there's lots out there," and began listing off his credentials of the different academic and journalistic endeavors he had been a part of. We talk very often together about one of his favorite and least favorite topics: how do you make prison a better place for prisoners? Over the years, he has pushed and pulled with administration, public policy, and the various groups inside to make prison a more hopeful place. Frequently, this has been off the skin of his own back. If you do Google Greg, you see, at 60, the articles that still portray him as the young man filled with hostility for society that is a threat to good order and life, they are readily available before all else.
Having spent most of his life now in prisons in Canada and the United States, it is hard to see who Greg has become in this world opaque to our view. Greg is not the most well-known advocate for the rights of prisoners. Shying away from the limelight, he often tells me, "I'm worried that people will see my big ego. It's not the Greg McMaster show." He's also not someone who is interested to talk about the politics or the theory behind the liberation. The way his lens operates is, how do we give a view of what's really happening in here, and how can prisoners give each other a view of what's happening inside themselves? He strives for community and fellowship, words that are entirely dangerous to the regime of corrections. Each day, each small hurdle is a legendary victory for him and worth the fight, yet worth the understanding it takes, even when it's to his own frustration, of what each prisoner holds within them and why. Today he speaks to us for Prisoner Justice Day on the challenges of passing these pursuits to the next generation, a changing face in the institutions, younger, more fractured, living the effects of a precarious world. He speaks too of the challenges within his world, the men and women aging inside, finding more frailty and vulnerability, collides with this new generation. Thank you, Greg McMaster, for your thoughts for August 10th, calling all heroes.
Greetings to everyone across the country who recognize the injustices related to prisoners. As we commemorate this Prisoner's Justice Day, I would like to try something a little different. Calling all heroes. A shout out to all could-be, should-be, and want-to-be heroes. Where the hell are you? Times are hard, they are getting worse, and your services are desperately needed. I have been incarcerated for a very long time, too long by some standards. 4 decades ago, I joined the fight for prisoners' rights by connecting with those who were working towards a more humane and just prison system. There were mentors, teachers, and role models to show me the way, to offer moral support and to help pick me up and dust me off when I stumbled along the way. There were lawyers, agencies, advocates, and media personalities who helped to legitimize the merits of our struggles. There was obvious commitment, a network of like-minded associates, and a sense of purpose as we strove for common goals. I use words such as was and were because I sense those days started passing us by about 5 years ago, leaving us in the government's dust, battered, bruised, and tired. A multitude of factors contributed to the dilemma I believe we are in today. Heads of agencies either retired or moved on to better-paying careers in order to support their families. Illness and death claimed some of our most prolific advocates and fighters on both sides of the prison fences. Prominent prisoners' rights attorneys stopped practicing law, and the lawyers who are left in a specialized field seem afraid to take on the government or want too much money from those who have no money. Legal aid made sure that our cries of suffering will no longer be heard by the courts by refusing to fund our most crucial civil rights matters. The Harper government struck the most lethal blow of all by severely cutting the budgets of all agencies that work with prisoners and outright terminating incredibly successful agencies such as Lifeline and Reach. I'm sorry to say that as I look around me today, I believe we have lost our way. We have a severe lack of front men and women, and when someone does come to the forefront, they receive a shocking lack of respect from the very people they are striving to help. As we revere our fallen heroes on this Prisoner's Justice Day, remembering our mentors and pathfinders, I believe we should also be paying homage to those lonely few who stand tall on their islands of isolation while doing battle for us all. The fact that I am attempting to use our solemn day of memoriam as a rallying point indicates how desperate I believe the situation to be. Factually, I see Prisoner's Justice Day as a singular most powerful remnant of a once mighty movement where what remains of our scattered conscience comes together for a common purpose on this particular day. Wherever you are in the country, whether you are imprisoned or free, when you walk away from today's memoriam service, please do not walk away from each other. My hope and prayer is that you will recognize the need, commit yourself to each other, excuse me, start to network again and rebuild the prisoners' rights movement in Canada so that once again is a formidable and useful tool in advancing the rights of all incarcerated souls. It's time to pass the torch and educate a whole new generation of heroes. Are you out there? Can you hear me? Calling all heroes. Thank you.
That was a piece from Greg McMaster entitled Calling All Heroes.
They call me Ben, here in the pen, where you take the guff and you suffer. But I'll be free when I'm 53, and I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. When I was a lad, I was really bad. It wasn't smart to be good. I beat up my dog, and I choked my frog, and I acted just as mean as I could. I hit all the girls and put gum in her curls, cause I like to hear them cry and bleed. I'd punch the little boys and steal all her toys, cause I knew they weren't smarter than me. Yeah, they call me Ben, here in the pen, where you take the guff and you suffer. But I'll be free when I'm 53, and I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. When I was 16, I was really mean. I could scrap at the toss of a coin. I was leader of a gang, rough rangy tangs, and you had to be a good thief to join. Yeah, we had the black jackets on our motorbikes, and we forced all the girls to skip school. And the cops, they'd all try to sympathize when we told them how our parents were so cruel. Yeah, they called me Ben, here in the pen, where you take the guff and you suffer. But I'll be free when I'm 53, and I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. When I turned 21, I had to have a gun, cause I planned me a robbery one day. And my girlfriend said that she'd rather be dead than to hang around with a guy like me. Well, I granted her wish and dumped her in with the fish. And then I went to meet Frank. Yeah, that's the same day I shot and killed me the cop. He didn't want to let me into the bank. Yeah, they call me Ben, here in the pen, where you take the guff and you suffer. But I'll be free when I'm 53, and I bet I'll be a whole lot tougher. I hope I'll be a whole lot tougher. What's the use? I guess I ain't a very good bluffer. Back to that hammer, man. Back to the hammer.
And that was Stompin' Tom Connors with Ben in the Pen here on the Prison Radio Show, broadcasting live from CQUT 90.3 FM. We will end the show today with various social commentaries from our friends over at prisonradio.org. We are going to hear commentaries by Mumia Abu-Jamal, Kalfani Malik Khaldun, Peter Mukaria, and Charles Diggs. So stay tuned.
Early morning, a time of rest, quiet, and repose. On August 8th, 1978, only the early birds in search of worms were stirring. Also, cops assembled, heavily armed. They attacked the Move House in West Philadelphia's Powelton Village. Then, hundreds and perhaps thousands of shots poured into the house. How could we know the number? For before night fell, the building would be shattered, razed into the dark, wet earth. Water cannons pumped hundreds of gallons into the house, a deliberate attempt to flush Move people from their own communal home. When they emerged to escape drowning and bullets shot into the dark basement, men, women, and children arose from the murky waters to find themselves facing dozens of cops fiendishly pointing rifles and pistols at them. Instinctively, they raised their arms to show that they weren't armed, to avoid being shot by the maddened coterie of cops. Delbert Africa pulled himself out of a basement window, his arms raised above his back and chest bare, only to be rifle-butted, slammed with a police helmet, and when he fell, pummeled, kicked repeatedly in his face and head. When he appeared in court for arraignment some hours later, his left eye looked more like a golf ball than an eyeball. Saliva ran down his chin, reflecting his broken jaw. Almost all of the men were beaten. And what of the women? They were driven to the banks of the Delaware River, where they heard cops arguing amongst themselves. One cop would say, "Let's rape them and throw them into the water." They were rerouted and driven to the nearby House of Correction, a county prison, to await trial. What happened to them on August 8th, the holistic rain of police gunfire, beatings, rape threats, and incarceration was nothing compared to what they faced in Philadelphia courtrooms, where they were denied their every right, including their alleged right of self-representation, beaten again when they refused to attend their own legal lynchings. And then the lynchpin, convictions, and common sentences before Judge Edwin Malmed of 30 to 100 years for third-degree murder? Malmed, during a phone call from me to the Frank Ford Show at WWDB FM radio, where the judge was a guest, answered the question of who killed the cop by saying, "I haven't the faintest idea." Nine people, nine men and women, nine MOVE members, and 30 to 100 years. Today, August 2017, marks 39 years in prison for MOVE members, of which seven survive. Merle and Phil Africa have returned to the source under what can only be called suspicious circumstances. Another fact, none of the imprisoned MOVE sisters had weapons charges. Eddie Africa was never convicted of any degree of murder. His charges? Attempted assault, I kid you not. MOVE members are in prison today because they were MOVE members, period. They're guilty of nothing except resistance to a racist, brutal, corrupt system. The same system that gave rise to mass incarceration on a scale that the world has never seen before. Their sentences are an abomination. Free Delbert, Eddie, Mike, Chuck, Janine, Janet, and Debbie Africa. From Imprison Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
My name is Kareem Charles Diggs, and the title of my essay here that I would like to share with the world is The National Disease in America. It appears that drug addiction dominates our airwaves. A second comes the president's war with the media and the Hillary Clinton and the former President Obama. These are the subjects that dominate our everyday media coverage. While the elections are over, the nation is being sidetracked away from the issues affecting the common citizen. Americans are being misled and directed away from national problems. America is a war nation. The military-industrial complex is the largest part of our budget. Billions of dollars are spent yearly on the military, NASA, space programs, and other secret operations that deal with foreign policy. There is no challenge to the tax funds used to maintain thousands of military installations all over the world. Being the most powerful nation on Earth costs us trillions of dollars in providing warships, warplanes, sustaining thousands of missiles, warheads at our perceived enemies. The trillions of dollars spent on the fallacy that some other nation is going to attack us is a myth. It is a lie impregnated into the very soul of America. This myth has become a national disease. This disease has become a religion more powerful than faith or actual belief in God. This national disease is never challenged by any politician or social groups because it is un-American to speak out against weapons of mass destruction. We have enough weapons to destroy all of humankind many times over. We should be concerned about our national disease because it has caused all our other needs to become secondary. Until we confront how our tax dollars are used, our communities will continue to suffer economic decay. specifically the cities and the rural communities, will exist in poverty, crime, and drug abuse. The violence will continue to plague the African-American community beyond redemption. More African-Americans are murdered by one another than all the wars ever fought. The disinclination to do anything about this national disgrace is based on racial disharmony. America has never been one nation under God. Slavery created the desegregation, Jim Crow, apartheid, and it continues today. There is not only the tale of two cities, but a nation of many cities, towns, which severely punishes the poor, those who have yet to make a way out of their permanent oppression. There are 45 million working poor who live in poverty, over 3 million citizens in prison on any given day. If the American citizens could understand that the money used to dominate the planet with guns and bombs and planes and ships, atomic and nuclear weapons, was used for human development, we could eliminate suffering, poverty overnight. Literally, with a few billion dollars, no tax upon the poor, free education, free college education, for those willing to study, we could see crime and violence reduced drastically. Our national disease to kill people who don't agree with our supremacy will only get worse unless we make the connection to our economic unhappiness. Trillions of dollars will continue to be used every year under every president until we confront this problem. If we could simply use the budget of the military for 1 year, America would no longer have poverty and senseless violence. Until the American citizen sees the two-party system, the race politics, we can expect the same four-year election circus. Dr. Martin Luther King instructed the nation that our military spending is destroying the systems in America. There is enough wealth in America for all Americans to live a decent and comfortable life. There has never been sufficient money spent on education, housing, medical care for the black Americans. We have always been at the bottom of the list for any changes, and this has made us a permanent underclass in America. This national system remains in place. Every city, town, state have created a system where poor people seems to be impossible to uplift themselves. There's only a certain amount of money in the budget. This is what the American citizens must understand. And it's not for human development. The tax money is being given to corporations to develop more and more control over our way of life. The urban cities, the rural areas, the working poor are not considered. It is time the sincere citizens and those who say they represent us to advocate change. Because to educate the citizens about mental health diseases that we have been infected with is the first step in solving our problem. I call it a national disease because everything is about war. War on poverty, war on crime, war on the immigrants. War, everything is a war. And when you have a war, you're talking about destroying, you're not healing. It's the war on drugs. It's not healing anybody. We're building more prisons. Our police stations are now have military weapons getting from the military on the citizens. So my point is that the myth that they're trying to solve the problems in America, that's just what it is. It's a myth. Until the American citizens cease from existing in fear, we can expect the same thing even out of our new President Trump. He may be doing things in a different way than some of the other presidents, but in the end, we're getting the same result. More wars, more police departments, schools closing down, hospitals closing down, more police, more courthouse. Just in Philadelphia, they just decided to build another central police station for $290 million, but they don't have enough books and computers and money for nurses when school starts in September. They have built another prison in Pennsylvania that costs over $400 million. We'll be moving into it next year sometime. They always have money to maintain the status quo. But my message and my cry to the American public, we have to change the conversation. We have to change the concept of what is a necessity in this country and what isn't. I hope my little message here, my little essay, has provoked enough attention that these subjects that I've tried to bring forward concerning the national disease, that we can start looking at some of the solutions to this mental illness that we're suffering from under this new war on terrorism. And thank you very much. My name is Kareem Charles Diggs, and I hope to hear from you people soon.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
My name is Brother Kalfani Malik Khaldun, Indiana political prisoner. I am calling from the Wabash Valley Correctional Facility, where I've been held for the last 4 years. We're all Sunni Muslims, not terrorists, by Kalfani Malik Khaldun. Bismillah ir-Rahman ir-Rahim, which means in the name of God, the most gracious, most merciful. A Sunni Muslim is a servant of Allah and righteous advocate of his faith, al-Islam. His head will bow down before Allah in gratitude. His feelings will be that as his Lord has blessed him with the greater power and knowledge, so he must exert himself for his own good and for the good of all humanity. Instead of arrogance, there will be humility. Instead of power drunkenness, there will be a strong realization of the need to serve humanity. His freedom will not be unbridled. He will be guided by the tenets of morality and divine revelation. In the field of law, the endeavors of the Sunni Muslim will be to make it the true embodiment of justice and the real protector of the rights of all, particularly the weak. The Sunni Muslim will see that everybody gets his due share and no injustice or oppression is inflicted on anyone. He will respect the law, make others respect it, and will serve that it is to serve and make sure that it is administered equitably. The life of the Sunni Muslim will always be filled with his God, Allah, piety, righteousness, and the truthfulness that he embodies. He will demonstrate in that belief that God alone is his Lord, that whatever blessings and talent he possesses have come from Allah, his God. He is the blessing of mankind. The Sunni Muslim mind will not be polluted with the evil thoughts or perverted ambitions. He will abstain from seeing evil, hearing evil, and doing evil. He will guard his tongue and will never consciously engage in gossip or slander or falsehoods. He will be the example and embodiment of goodness and nobility, and will defend right and truth, even at the cost of his own life. Such a person will be a force to be reckoned with. He is bound to succeed because his God, Allah, will be pleased. He's the example of his faith. The Sunni Muslim will be highly respected. He will only bow his head to his God, the Almighty. No power can make him deviate from the right path. No amount of wealth or prestige can buy his faith. The Sunni Muslim will be just to everyone, discharge his duties honestly, and work for the good of others. People's hearts will naturally be drawn to him. He will not abuse his faith or that of those he follows to oppress or kill innocent human beings, as the terrorist has done, causing people to think al-Islam represents death and not peace. It's the human being who uses Islam for their own agenda. It's not our way of life to kill innocent people at all. Such is the life and character of the Sunni Muslim. Islam is the natural religion of all men, in every age, in every country, and among every people. All God-knowing and truth-loving men and women have believed and lived this very religion. And it says, this is a quote inside the holy book that we practice in Islam. Islam doeth invite all people to the truth. There is no cause for dissembling or disrupting false, or false are the people who corrupt God's truth or hinder men from coming to God. Let the Muslims hold together in unity and discipline, knowing that they have a mission of righteousness for humanity. No harm can come to them. Though there are good men and true in their faith, Muslims must be true to their brotherhood. They should seek help and friendship from their own and stand firm in constancy and patience and perseverance. We are not terrorists. We are Muslim men and women who live inside this country, who practice our faith with collective responsibility to our God and our Lord. This is the Sunni Muslims' path. We are not terrorists. We are simply God's servants. Thank you. Peace.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Greetings. My name is Peter Kamam Korea. I'm calling from Red Onion State Prison in Virginia. This commentary is about this long-term segregation, this long-term solitary confinement currently being practiced in Virginia. On February 2013, Virginia DOC implemented a program called Challenge Series Step-Down Program. In theory, the objective of this step-down program is to eliminate the practice of indefinite solitary confinement and facilitate ways for prisoners to make it back to the general population expeditiously by participating and completing the books offered. However, the objective completely contrasts with what is actually being enforced. Prisoners are either classified to special management, SM, or intensive management, IM, by the treatment team. For those classified as IM, they can qualify for general population status upon completion of the program. As for those classified as IM, they can never qualify for general population status despite having completed the program. And no matter how much one's behavior ameliorates, he is permanently held in segregation. During this arbitrary classification, prisoners were not awarded their due process rights, for we are not allowed to be present at the hearing. Therefore, unable to produce evidence, rebut, call witnesses, or appeal that classification which confined us to indefinite solitary confinement. In the case of Austin v. Wilkinson, the court ruled that the inmate must be allowed to appear at the reclassification hearing and present evidence, including witnesses and documents, in support of his position. And the reclassification committee must issue a written statement specifically describing the evidence relied on and the reasons for their recommendation. However, Virginia prison guards are not adhering by this due process mandate. Prison walls or fences do not serve as a barrier separating prisoners from the protection of the Constitution. Due process simply permits prisoners to challenge any status or classification. Condemning prisoners to indefinite solitary confinement and subjecting them to no human contact, indefinite solitary confinement, limited outside recreation, or locked in an individual dog cage, warehousing a cell 23 hours a day, 365 a year, permanently, and the right to challenge those conditions is not unconstitutional, but torturous and inhumane, and the paradox of rehabilitation that prison guards rhapsodically promulgate to society. The pretense of rehabilitation has been reduced by psychological torture techniques in which prisoners are housed in solitary confinement for the duration of their sentence. For those who deny your comprehension of a life in prison, indefinite solitary confinement is the most torturous experience a human being can be subjected to while in prison. It is non-stop punishment that is methodically designed to deteriorate one's mind and humanity. In order to lower the recidivism rates, prisoners must be properly rehabilitated and equipped with the right transitional skills needed to re-enter society. However, prison guards feel that abolishing genuine rehabilitation programs and torturing prisoners with indefinite solitary confinement will be more productive rather than rehabilitation. The issue of indefinite solitary confinement, you know, is diminutive in comparison to the overall malfeasance that are perpetuating prisons nationally, but that would require an entire different and longer commentary. So I would solely focus on this one for now. Anyway, I currently ask that I respectfully ask anyone listening who might be able to assist us in this legal battle to please, you know, log on to the court's website and check out my case pertaining to this commentary, Peter K. McCurria versus Harold Clark. Peter K. McCurria, my last name, McCurria, M-U-K-U-R-I-A, versus Harold Clark, et cetera, all 715-CV-00172-JPJ-RSB, number 16-7371. The case is currently pending in the courts of appeal. I'd appreciate it if you could log onto the court's website and review the court's opinion pertaining to this matter. Thank you very much.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
You are still listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM. We heard various commentaries from prisonradio.org, including comments by Mumia Abu-Jamal, Kalfani Malik Khaldun, Peter Mukaria last up, and we also heard from Charles Diggs on the National Disease of America. Next, we're going to hear from Sam Cook.
I hear something saying, that's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying, ah, 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 ah.
Well, don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down, working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them moaning their lives away, then you hear somebody say, that's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. Can't you hear them saying, I'm going home one of these days. I'm going home, see my woman whom I love so dear. But meanwhile, I've got to work right here. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying, my, 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 my. My work is so hard, give me water, I'm thirsty, my work is so hard, oh, oh, my, 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 my work is so hard, oh.
The time is presently 5:58 p.m., and you've been listening to a special Prisoner Justice Day episode of the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. The next episode of the Prison Radio Show will air on Friday, August 24th at 11 a.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write us at The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thanks again for tuning into The Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name's Noah.
And my name is Candace.
And we've been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is?